Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back, and it is now or never, and we've got a lot of things to kind of catch up on. I've got to get a lot of interviews done. It's just been one of those weeks where you kind of have to take focus on other things. Anyway, as I always say, the debt, as I'm beginning to always say, the debt is fraud, just so you understand. What we're seeing our public servants doing, the things that they are involved with, is all unauthorized. Almost everything that they're doing is unauthorized. They've assumed all sorts of powers. They've basically taken it to the level of their discretion. I mean, they are literally making the decision. And here's the problem, folks, because too many people do not know. So how is it we're going to get people to get involved and understand this fraud? Well, I mean, there are several people that are trying to help get this information out. I don't care. There's no copyright. There is no copyright for anybody saying that that debt is fraud. You're more than welcome to repeat it. And as a matter of fact, all you need to do is just grab the third petition is on the invasion, and it is petition 6 that's on the Department of Transportation. All you need to do is grab petition 6, go through it, and understand it. Read it a couple of times. If it's difficult, let me know. If you need some help improving it, then let me know. Because I always have this, and a good friend of mine taught me, because it was the bane of his existence. He always struggled with making things better. And being an engineer, that's really good. It's good to have somebody make something better. But he always told me that the enemy of good enough, better is the enemy of good enough. And so, and he should never have told me that, because every time he started going down a path of, you know, we'd come up with a solution, or he would actually, you know, come up with a solution of installing or what have you, and then he would go off and spend a lot of time on making it better, and I'd have to grab him and say, hey, stop, it's good enough. Anyway, because, you know, it's kind of like in the old days, and some people may understand this, in the old days you could take a car, you know, an old combustion engine, the 60s, 70s, pre-real smog crap, and you could do some things to that car to really improve its performance. And, you know, with a few $100s, you could make that thing a lot more powerful. With a couple $1,000s, you could really improve its performance. I mean, really improve its performance. To get it, you know, so in other words, in the old days, you know, it was the quarter mile. People would take their car out and, you know, run a quarter mile and see how fast they can go. Let's say 12 seconds or something like that. And you could pay a couple $100s and shave maybe a second or two off that. A couple $1,000s, you could shave another few seconds off that and get it down to maybe 9-8 seconds. Well, actually, no, that's kind of stretch. I think your starting point would be maybe 20 or 16 seconds, and then you'd be able to start taking chunks. Well, there, you get to a point where it becomes exponentially more expensive to shave off another second of time. And so you get to a point where you get this critical mass in trying to create the fastest car capable with the engine and the car body, everything else you're dealing with, to where you're basically spending more. You might as well have just built your own car, because that's how much money you'd be spending in improving and improving and improving, making it faster. So the concept of better is the enemy of good enough. So anyway, as we kind of look at everything I've been kind of doing over the past few months, I have been getting involved with, actually, it's almost everybody that I deal with, almost every patriot is a conspiracy theorist, and there are different degrees of conspiracy theorists. I think most patriots today used to, you know, a long time ago, used to think that those clouds overhead, you know, what was coming out of those airliners, supposedly airliners, these jets at very high level, those chemtrails, that was a conspiracy. And they just didn't believe it until they saw it continue and continue and continue. And as evidence started to come out, they started believing the conspiracy theory. Now, I could have told people a long time ago that they, you know, just look up Tar Fox and NASA. You know, do a search, use a search engine and look for NASA plus Tar Fox, all capital letters, T-A-R-F-O-X. And it would take you right there to where they were doing the experiments and what the heck they were doing. It's not like that was, that's condensation. No, they were actually showing how they would be using spraying, using the jet stream, prevailing winds. They did all sorts of tests before they launched this program. And the government launched a program that they didn't have the authority to do. This goes back to, you know, everything's fraud. They're doing things, and there's people that are involved in many of these types of operations or things that are happening that nobody really knows about, or very few people know the details. However, there needs to be a conversation, and apparently there's been kind of a conversation in Tennessee. My hat's off to the Tennessee legislature for basically trying to outlaw the chemtrails. The problem is, what they should have done was they should have demanded that they have all the data on every aircraft that flies over their airspace. They are a sovereign state. That is their airspace. Nobody has any dominance over their airspace. Now, the U.S. government may have dominance when necessary, but to actually have permanent dominance, they don't. And, you know, there's lots of people out there that talk about, these conspiracies. And I deal with these all the time. And many of these conspiracies are just a big, huge part of this facade. And so here's the question I have. You know, can all the conspiracy theories, can every single one be correct? Ask yourself this question. Can every single one be correct? And as a matter of fact, the more you dive into conspiracy theories, the easier it is to find these rat holes. And so what if they are, though? Let's say you find a high percentage. Let's just say you just say, okay, they're all. Let's concede that every conspiracy theory baked up by the craziest of crazies, they're all correct. Then what do you benefit from knowing the truth and diving in and becoming the student, or let's just say the master graduate, the grand poobah of conspiracy theories? You become the most, I guess, entertaining person in the room because you can just talk about all these things. Maybe that's kind of cool, and maybe that's one of the benefits. But here's the real question. Even if you know and understand the truth about all the conspiracy theories, answer this question. How does that knowledge save you? How will that knowledge save our Constitution? And how will that knowledge save our Republic? Because understanding this grand facade is absolutely worthless until you understand that everything that the government is doing that is not enumerated within the Constitution is illegitimate. So why do we waste time on all the things that they're doing when we're working on, because we've got plenty of things everybody knows about. Everybody knows, you know, how they're spying on us. I mean, we didn't need Snowden to do that. Rand Paul, there were plenty of people that were outward speaking that we were being spied on. Even Julian Assange kind of exposed that. And we didn't need that even. So the fact is, and as a matter of fact, we've even heard that the big tech has been spying on us with Amazon and Siri and Echo and all of these different devices, AI devices and listening. I'll just say people are literally allowing their own homes to have a bug in them, a spy. Because when you have an Amazon or an Apple or any type of monitoring AI question type of thing, are you really better off? Ask those people who have had the cops come into their home because they heard something, because Siri heard something or what have you, Alexa. And next thing you know, they think that there's a big drug bust or something, to, you know, some crimes being committed. And what do you know? That wasn't the case. So getting back to whether you're any better off, does it really benefit you to spend that much time? Let's look at addictive behavior. When we spend an inordinate amount of time in gambling, drinking, or what have you, I mean, it's one thing to imbibe in alcohol. You know, it's another thing to do it a lot, because the more you do it, the more damage you do. It's the same thing with anything, drugs, what have you. But when you spend all of this time and you're consumed on, oh, I got to read up about this, I've got to read up about that. The time that you spend on getting to understand that is not benefiting you one bit. It's just a complete waste of time. All you need to know is right there in these petitions. Do they have the authority to wander outside the Constitution? No. Your state government does not have the authority to wander outside that Constitution either. And the reason that they are wandering outside and operating well beyond, and they're doing anything and everything they can get away with, because the federal government has told them they could. This is where we're at, folks. What are you going to do? Why are you keep... I'm not going to say that the people that listen to this show are wasting their time. But you have to help people. Help them break the pornography cycle of conspiracies, the news, all of these things that have them completely enthralled and addicted to, you know, more information. I've got to see, I need to see a video, the Olympics, the election. Look at the election. I may be an aberrant. I might be, you know, an outlier. But I look at the elections at the national level is, you know, we have very little influence over them because the party stole our political process years ago. Friday, I went down and I kind of, you know, scattershot you over the importance of making all elections local. You want to take back your political system, you have to take back the local elections and the election cycle. In other words, take it away from the party and say, no more, no more. You know, we do not have the right to actually constrain anybody from being able to run for office, especially for the federal elections. The way the party has gone down this path, it's one thing, you know, if you can't garner any votes, but at least your name was on the election or on the ballot thing, then okay. And as a matter of fact, there's ways to kind of trim that down. As a matter of fact, you could, you know, create advantages, disadvantages, or what have you. But the bottom line is we're supposed to have a system that anybody that wants to run and represent the people, either at the county, at the state, or at the federal level, it should be open. The only reason why in Congress and the Senate, it kind of becomes unmanageable is because, one, the Senate is a statewide position. And that means you could really create thousands of people that would run. if we didn't have the 17th Amendment, the selection of, because when the state legislatures looked at who would be potentially their next senator to represent their suffrage in the Senate, well, did they have an election? No. It was a bunch of nominations, and the whole state was wide open to their grasp, and they already knew who was best. So the fact that we have a senator election on the state ballot, if we just did away with the 17th Amendment, there's a way of doing this. We don't even need to repeal it. It can be rescinded. It is the only amendment where the federal government accepted a rescission of a rejection and actually allowed the state to change its position. We've got an article on this. You know, it's an old and it's a rough article. It gives you the information. It's, you know, it's not my best work, but we kind of cover all the bases. Read the article on rescinding the 17th Amendment. Then it would go back to the state legislature. And as a matter of fact, if you want to make sure that your state legislature actually seats a senator, you need to put that in the state constitution to abide by the process established in Article 1 of the Constitution, that they actually select and seat a senator to give them their suffrage, equal suffrage in the Senate. So anyway, as we kind of look down this path of what the federal government can do and what they can't do, and our elections and taking back, making all elections local, if we actually understood the apportionment, it's not a million people. It would be 30,000. And I believe if we actually had the kind of government we're supposed to have, then who really cares if you have, 100 people running for office for your representatives? Who cares? Because it's going to come down to probably a top two or top three. And at that point in time, if you actually have that many, then you do a runoff. And there's nothing wrong with doing a runoff. It's better to do a runoff than be forced to have a primary and allow the party to undermine your representation. We have seen too many cases in dark red counties where, or in dark red legislative districts, where the party would deliberately undermine the most constitutional candidate so that the Democrat would act, well, actually, it's not a dark red, it would be a dark blue. But we've actually seen how the party, you know, basically protects the other party. They work together. And I know this is hard for everybody to understand, but to think otherwise, to think that we don't have a uniparty, then you would actually have to, we'd actually have to go back through the history of the parties and how over time they realized that if they worked together, they could have the control that they needed to move us in the direction. So who controls the party? Well, today it's the globalists. Back then, I'm not sure it was the globalist. I think sometimes people actually did things because they thought it was a better way. And down the road, that other way, that, you know, that good intentions actually becomes a highway to hell type of thing, right? You know, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. Well, it's not a road if we've got so many people with good intentions trying to drive us down this point. It becomes a highway, a multi-lane throughfare of no exits allowed. Anyway, so when you start really dealing with people, dealing with all of these things that don't matter, help them understand. Help them understand. What's more important is understanding the few things that they can do. If they're doing something that is not within the enumerated powers, then you have to stand up and say, you can't do that. Education, why are we having these conversations over conservative control and liberal control over education when they shouldn't even have any control at the federal level? And even at the state level, most states do not have education within their constitution. I mean, other than some general, yeah, we're going to support it and make sure that we have a good education system. But it doesn't empower them. It doesn't give them general powers. What has to happen is that we actually have to start understanding what we're dealing with. What is legitimate and what isn't legitimate? The conspiracy theories and all of these other things create a cloud. And I'm telling you, I've dealt with plenty of people who do entertainment on radio shows. They have their broadcasts and they're full-time conspiracy mode. Well, if you're spending an hour listening to somebody talking about the conspiracies and the election conspiracy and this, and they only have a myopic solution to the one little conspiracy, then they're not helping with the problem. Because bottom line, the federal government should not be involved in our election process. The states shouldn't even be involved. It comes down to the counties. The only thing that is really a statewide election, and actually, the reason why we have statewide elections is because every state failed to create an electoral college. Because your county should create an elector for your county for the state. And your congressional district, you should have an elector for your congressional district. And then let the state legislatures choose their two electors to actually cast their vote for whom they choose to be their electors to choose the president of the United States. When it comes down to the counties, your county electors will choose your governor. Oh my heavens, we can't have that. Why not? We'd be better served. The way the elections are working, it is all about who can get the most amount of money to win. It's all corrupt. And as a matter of fact, because of the way the election process runs today, I even talked about this with Semi Bird with Washington. I mean, the guy turned his back on the Constitution. The other guy, Reichardt, you know, the Republican, the two Republican, you know, key Republicans in the race that are getting the most amount of support. Reichardt is corrupt. He was a sheriff in a blue county. And you can't be a Republican. As a matter of fact, he was a Democrat. He just took on this Republican facade. He's basically a rhino. And it really frustrates me that I can't get politicians in a blue state to take a position on the Constitution. It's almost like they have to hide whenever the Constitution comes out because they don't want pictures. I mean, it's almost... I mean... This is how bad it's gotten. I mean, I understand that you don't want compromising pictures, but to tell me that you're compromised because the Constitution's on the table where you're sitting. Oh my gosh, folks, we've got a real problem. And we have to start taking it back because bottom line, if you have electors and your electors are focused on the Constitution and they're going to challenge the candidates, as a matter of fact, this is what would be happening. We'd actually start having constitutional tests. We need to invoke constitutional tests for everybody. This isn't that hard. An executive should understand what their role and responsibility is very specifically and have a test regarding that. And then on top of that, they should have a very good, strong general knowledge of the state constitution if it's a state election. And at the federal level, it's the same thing. And at the county level, it should be the same thing. This is why we have to start creating county constitutions. So when we come back, we're going to kind of talk about, there's one other thing it just got under my craw this weekend regarding the right to privacy and so forth, your Fourth Amendment right. And so I want to read that and I want to dive into why this is so important and it's being trampled on big time. We'll be right back after this message with that, and then we'll back into a Republican form of government. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back. Thank you so much.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so I would just say this. Let me close on one of the things I was trying to get out. I mean, I understand that there's lots of people coming to the table, and I understand that there are people that, you know, are in the throes of the conspiracy theories and so forth, convention of states or what have you. And so we have to kind of go through this cycle each time. Everybody comes, a new person comes to the table. Oh, okay, where are you coming from? Are you coming from the sovereign citizen movement? Okay, so you have all of these, you know, hard fixtures of capital U, capital P's. And okay, so forget about that. What you really need to understand is that our government only has these authorities. And so everything that they've done to create this world that, you know, has rocked your world has been unconstitutional. The things that they're doing today, they have no authority to do. Just because they're doing it doesn't mean they have the authority to do it. This has all been done in fraud, period. I can't say this enough. It's fraud. Okay? So, anyway, so there's ways of dealing with this. This is, I think, why the next article is going to be critical, to help everybody understand, you know, quit chasing your tail. You know, somebody tells you that there's something on your back, you know, you've got something on your jacket, on your back shoulder, and you just try to, you know, you could play the dog and chase your tail, try to see if you can see that, or just stop, take your jacket off, take a quick look and go, oh, okay, yeah, that's a problem, I need to get this cleaned, what have you, but, you know, you got other more important things to do. We all have more important things to do. And we need to be focused on getting those done. So let me dive into this one point. The right, this is the Fourth Amendment, the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures, period. So how is it that, because it dawned on me that if you have data by your doctor's wanting to take everything online, but you have a right to have that data secure. As a matter of fact, you have a constitutional right, and they have a responsibility to protect that right. Now, they have this rule called HEPA, but HEPA is not constitutional, because HEPA just means as long as they have some safeguards. But I am here to tell you that if they have your data where you can log in and access your data and interface with your doctor online, then that interface and that data is available to everybody. Anybody that can hack through the security parameters, because it's not like this is cryptography. This is not like you use a crypto. I mean, it's one thing to log in. When we had secure logins, you had to log in. And I mean, this is cryptography running across your internet to going into a portal where when you logged in, you actually had to have this little it's kind of like a decoder pin. You had to push it, and it would give you a random series of numbers and letters at that point in time for your login so that you could actually log in and be in sync with that very specific access portal. There's just no way that could ever be hacked. Can't be hacked. The only way you can hack it is you got to be inside it to get to it. So they have the ability of creating things like that. So to say, you know what, we want you to be a part of this, and we want you to have this pin or this little, you know, this little button that you'd have to, you know, get your secure login. When I worked in the defense contracting, we had that so that we could log in and that our system. Now, here's the problem, because, and as a matter of fact, you have these separations because I will just say this. Go look up Protection Layer 5 DSCID. Because if you look that up, Protection Layer 5, it'll kind of talk about what it would take to secure data from a, you know, an internet access portal for classifications and so forth. And folks, your personal data should be held with the utmost secrecy because you have a right to that. Unless there has been a warrant that has actually been signed by a judge with probable cause that they need to have access to that. But they don't need to have access online to that. That's something that they can just go in, provide the warrant. But to be able to give government this nonchalant direct access, or anybody, folks, the point is this. Why am I rambling on this? Wherever your data is being kept, wherever it is being kept, you have a right to have it autonomous. In other words, you have a right to demand that your healthcare provider not make that available on the internet or through their web system, that it needs to be in its own autonomous, secure system. So it's one thing that the doctor can access that when you walk in because then he has your records. But for anybody else to access it, that system should be separate and it should be secure. That the only way you could get into that is through some hardcore security. Because if not, then it is accessible. We have to look at the fact that there are evildoers, whether they be foreign or domestic. There are people out there to steal data, to try to basically either make money, exploit, you know, some factors about you, what have you. We have a right to have that data separated. And the fact is, we're just an open society. No, we're a protected society, more so than open. And it is the people that are protected, not the government. The government is supposed to be transparent. This is why I tell you that when it comes down to classifications and oversight, the state legislatures should have full oversight and full knowledge of every classified thing that's going on being done by the federal government. If we did that, if we had the state legislature, I've talked about this, why Snowden is no hero. Snowden has done more damage and he doesn't deserve hero status. He should be hanged. He committed treason. If we want to create a secure system, we can do that. But what Snowden did wasn't really helping anybody. It was giving him, the narcissist, his 15 minutes of fame. And see, I'll stand toe-to-toe with anybody that wants to argue otherwise. Because bottom line, that information should have been safeguarded, but it should have gone into the state legislatures, and had the state legislatures understood their responsibility of oversight over the federal government instead of understanding or basically believing this concocted lie that they are the underlings of the federal government. We need to change the roles. This is the whole point of what we're talking about. Your county is the most powerful governing body in the United States. The second most powerful governing body you have representation in is your state legislature. Your third least, the least governing body that we have, that only has very specified and very specific roles. And yeah, they have weapons to defend us and those types of things, but that's it. That's the federal government. They're the grandchild, the great grandchild, right? I mean, the child government is your county. The grandchild is your state. The great grandchild, the least and the youngest that deserves the least from your inheritance, is the federal government. Not that I want to talk about inheritance taxation, because property tax and all those types of things should go away. If we get government to do those few things that we wanted to do and actually hold corporations to doing things instead of them basically leveraging us and controlling us and basically being the movers of the globalization of our commerce and everything else, they're the princes and the kings. These corporations, I talked about this, I think, Friday. When you really look at these major corporations, they're just like kingdoms. But they don't have any, you know, physical land. Oh, but they do have physical land because they do control nations. We live in a very dark and evil world because our governments and evil people at the banks and evil people at corporations and so forth have been working together to subjugate mankind. It's just that simple. And that's all you need to know about the conspiracy theory. All you need to know is at the high level that they're doing this, and in the United States, they don't have the authority to do any of this. And as a matter of fact, we have the Constitution and the authority on our side to be able to get them back into scope of those defined roles, responsibilities, powers, and properties that have been enumerated for them. That's it. So, by the way, I do have both color-coded constitutions now. So you've got the color-coded constitution that dives into the violations, and then the other color-coded constitution is every clause is colored to determine whether it's a role and responsibility, whether it's a power, whether it's a property, whether it's a standard or jurisdiction or so, criminal jurisdiction or so forth. So go through that so that you can start understanding, you know, what that line in the Constitution really means. You know, it may not be perfect. That may need a little tweaking here and there. And so I look forward to anybody giving me input and saying, hey, you know, is this correct? And then, you know, because I don't want to say I rushed through it. I thought I did a thorough job, but I make mistakes and I'm okay with being corrected. So please let me know if the color-coded constitution for the enumerations of the Constitution, you know, if you pull that in and you got a problem, just let me know. I'll be happy to fix it. So I harangue and harangue and harangue over this thing called a Republican form of government. What you need to know, right? I mean, everybody has to know something. And so what you all need to know is, one, what is a Republican form of government? We do talk about this, and so when we go into what a Republican form of government is, we kind of talk about the rule of law. It's a fundamental driver in a Republican form of government. The law is our king. Now, you can't, our Republican form of government, the law is our king. But remember, Britain was a Republican form of government. They actually had a king. They had a magistrate system. We moved away from a magistrate system, and we wanted to make sure we didn't have an all-powerful pooba. And Continental Congress was an all-powerful pooba. It basically was a single-body magistrate. And so what we did was we actually created and separated the magistrate into three separate functions, or what we call branches. legislative, executive, and judiciary. So what you should know by now is you should know that in our representative form of government, we actually have three functions of our government, or three branches, or three heads, or three parts of the magistrate. Even at the county, you should have an executive, you should have legislators, and you should have a judiciary. If you can't afford a judiciary and an executive, then you shouldn't have a county, because that means you can't afford to have a militia, you can't even support it. And so there are plenty of counties out there that are, you know, like 100 people in the county, like in Texas and so forth, these really remote, that's not a county. That may be a district of a county, a subdivision of a district, but we need, and I understand that some counties are going to be big. But bottom line, a county should be self-sufficient where it can sustain itself based on the people living in that county. And so if we look at government being self-sustaining and self-sufficient, then it helps us understand what government should really be doing, especially the largest part of our government, right? The representation. This is why I hope to have Leah Cushman from New Hampshire on, because they don't get paid. They get a stipend. It's a responsibility. It's a citizen's government up there. And that's what we should be having at our county and our state and at the federal level. And as a matter of fact, for us to have the appropriate representation at the federal level, going back to 30,000 or maybe 50,000 at the most, let's say we go to 50,000, then there would be 1,000 counties out of the 3,000 some odd. There'd be about 1,000 counties. That would have its own representation. Isn't that great? I mean, you know, you'd actually have, you know, a representative for your county. You'd have a representative out of your county for your state, and you'd have a representative out of your county for the federal government. And people say, oh, well, it'd be too hard. It'd be too big of a government. No, that's not true. That is not true. Because we can always, when now that we've grown to a point, because the framers actually had this envision regarding the Electoral College, right? What do you do when you have so many representatives and you need to choose the president? Then you vote by state as a delegation. Now you can break down the delegations, but I wouldn't think that that would be appropriate, because the representation in your state, just like the representation in your county, is critical. And you, one county should not be able to walk just because they have more people, because it's better to live there, doesn't mean it should have more weight politically. And so they may have more representation, but when it comes down to voting at the state level for laws, if you have that many people, like the state of California, and so this actually helps, and it, I think it induces this force of Los Angeles County to be broken up. And the people of, you know, what is that? It starts with an L that's north of it. It's up by Edwards Air Force Base. There's Antelope Valley, and I know people that live there, and so I get these moments where the names just elude me. But Los Angeles is a very large county. The Thousand Oaks side, I think Ventura County borders right there by Thousand Oaks. But if you broke down Los Angeles County and Riverside County and Orange County into smaller counties, then you would actually have probably a better representation that way. But either way, you're still going to have, at a statewide vote, you still need to have a majority of the counties to making law. Right now, it is done by population. You have a democracy. In other words, when we think in context of passing a law or amending the Constitution, there should be barriers, just like with the Senate, in approving of a judge. They need to have a 60%, you know, threshold to be able to approve the justices that go into the Supreme Court. What they do is they try to break that so that they can use just a basic democracy. And I'm here to tell you that we need to maintain those standards. The last thing we want to do is actually allow a 50% plus one, because that takes us back down to these factions where we start getting divided over the party line. The way we stay away from that is by using the Constitution. So when we actually have a judge, or when you have a governor, or when you have somebody that is pursuing or, you know, nominated, and we want to find out if they're better or not, they should take a test. And based on that test, and based on the rest of the nominees for the governorship or the judgeship, whatever, whoever scores the highest should be the hands-down winner. If you have three that come up with 100%, then you now have a beauty contest. And now you can grill them and question them and let them campaign, and then you decide. Because, folks, when we have our public servants literate in understanding the Constitution, then it's easier to constrain them, because when all of a sudden they decide to vote, they decide to create a law, they decide to make a ruling, they decide to take an action that is not within the enumerations of the Constitution, we can quickly and directly hold them accountable and basically say, you knew. You passed this test because you actually answered that very specific question that you could not do these things because it's not enumerated. Folks, see how simple our life would be if we were focused on constitutional compliance. And the way to do this is to start diving into this process that we're basically, I'll just say, proffering. We are here providing you a path and a direction. It's called interposition. Interposition is where we use petitions at the county level. Then we use the county petitions to the state level. And then we use the state petitions as a majority of the states start petitioning the federal government and getting them into compliance. So what you need to know by now is you need to understand the fundamentals of republicanism. That we have the three tiers of representation, and that the law is king, and our representation, the other little side factor. Okay, it's not just we the people have representation, but the government that we create has to have an equal suffrage in the Senate. So at the state level, this is why, you know, when it really breaks down to how the counties cast their votes. And so when we really look at any state in the union, you're going to find that there are far more red counties than there are blue. So this would actually encourage more of the blue counties to break up into more of the, you know, into more counties. The problem when they do that is they lose their control over the red bastions. And so bottom line, if there's going to be severances, there needs to be severances based on the communities. In other words, you can't split, because that's gerrymandering. When you actually drive a line between a community that's, you know, it's a conservative community. These people out here are liberals. These people over here, they are very conservative because, you know, their essence was farming. Their essence was agrarian, whatever. These people over here, tech, they're very conservative as well, whatever. But these groups should actually have their own community that they can create to either carve out a county or at least a district within that county. Don't let some judge and politicians start dividing you, because you should be able to establish, no, we are a unique community. And if you can do that, if you have enough people within your community to where you can create a constitution, you actually pull together and you actually have a constitutional convention to say, we're creating a district of this county. Then there you go. Folks, do not hesitate in thinking that you don't have the right to institute a government subordinate, or I should say, at the base level, not subordinate, because when you're creating a community government, that should be the superior. Because you can subdivide a county into districts. And when you do that, the majority of the power should be really held at the district level, and that the county becomes a general government. So when you're living in LA, you may actually have four tiers or five tiers of government. If you don't break down the county and you actually have districts and then regions, or actually have regions and then within the regions you have districts, but you break them down based on counties, based on how the people identify themselves. It's supposed to be representation of the people, right? Not the politicians, not the judges, not these people that want to gerrymander. Those people, when Patrick Henry did this, right after the ratification of the Constitution, because that's what he did, the first person under the Constitution to play with boundaries was Patrick Henry. Eldridge Gerry did it afterwards. So we call it gerrymandering, but it's actually gerrymandering, but it should be called Patrick Henrymandering. Anyway, it is when they make decisions to create favorable outcomes. Our government is not to be able to create outcomes based on how they want to manage us. We should be able to have direct say on how we want to be managed. This is the whole point of the consent of the governed. I understand that we play this very dangerous line of having a democracy, and you know, we all have to consent. We're never going to get a community that's going to be 100% one way. But if you have a prevailing, you know, if you have a community that has a prevailing tendency or a lean, then that's it. It doesn't matter. Or if you have one community that is just a hodgepodge because it is literally a multicultural area where different cultures have kind of migrated in just due to the cost or the housing, what have you, whatever the factors were, that shouldn't really matter. But understanding republicanism moving forward is what's really critical. Now, what you should be doing by now is the next step we need to talk about. So we've talked about what you really need to know is republicanism, American republicanism. So what is it you should be doing now? Should you be spending all this time understanding the conservative, or I should say the conspiracy theories, or understanding what just happened in the news cycle? The more time you waste on things that will not solve the problem, that's just marketing. I call that marketing, okay? So when we come back, when we actually have time to do this, because we're going to be doing more interviews coming up, when we have more time to do this, we will revisit this on what you should be doing by now. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract and with Republic Review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as Republic Review. Please read my argument for Republic Review, as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.